Blog Talk Radio.
With Angela Butler. Today the interview is with author Gary Tavares. He is the author of Domestic Vows. He has a short film on YouTube. You might check it out. The short piece has a lot of things going on in it, and it needs to be made into a film. So I'm waiting on the film version. How are you doing, Mr. Tavares?
Hello, how's it going?
I'm doing all right, doing the best I can.
That's good. That's what we're all doing.
Yes, sir. So you ready for the interview?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And you wrote the film.
Deceptive Vows.
Deceptive Vows,
it's
yes.
Deceptive Vows
by author G. Tavares.
Deceptive Vows by Gary Tavares, yeah. And
just Gary Tavares, okay.
Also called...
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's got over
so
488,000 views.
Wow, that's great. So you have the screenplay for director's Deceptive Vows, and you
deceptive.
Also... Yes, sir. So you have the screenplay, and you have the book.
Yes, I have the screenplay, the book, and it started out as a play that I wrote back in 2000 when I lived in the Bay Area, California. It was called Until Death Do Us Part. It was a theatrical play that I wrote that was on stage in the Oakland and Berkeley areas of California. And it did well as a play, and then I wrote the movie script and pretty much had it sitting around and then decided to write the book version of it. We did the film trailer first. Almost 4 years ago we did the film trailer, and so we did the film trailer and... which is about 2 minutes and 12 seconds. In June of 2018, we did the short film version, and that's the one that's 5 minutes and 51 seconds, the one that's getting all the praise and YouTube almost viral on there.
Oh, wow. That is wonderful. That is wonderful. And so how close are you to getting it, to having it made into a film?
Well, very close. I have the full movie script. I have what we call a line producer that wrote the budget for it. He puts it at about $2.8 million to have it, the full-length movie shot here in Atlanta. He puts it at about $2.8 million. But, so it's basically getting a production company, producers, or someone that believes that'll believe in it and put it on, because, of course, you know, I don't have that type of budget. So we're talking about getting interest in it to get it done, you know, to get the funding to get it shot. That's basically where we are right now. But I think it's ready to go, and I believe it would be a great movie, kind of somewhat of a maybe Lifetime type movie, you know, Burning Bed, A Fatal Attraction, Obsession, you know, those types of movie, Sleeping with the Enemy, you know, that type of level.
Sleeping with the Enemy is one of my favorite movies. Julia Roberts.
Yeah. So it'll be along that level, but you know, it brings something different to the table. You know, when we were shooting it, of course, in the play and in the book version, it was Andre, a black man abusing a black woman, Andre abusing Patricia. But when we was doing the casting for the roles, we found this Caucasian gentleman, you know, that was able to knock the role out of the ballpark, you know, of an abusive male. So we said, hey, that might be great, something that would make it, you know, kind of somewhat original, because you don't really see movies where there's interracial, a whole lot of movies where there's interracial domestic violence. So, you know, we said, well, we'll keep him, and then we'll, you know, leave the abused woman as African American. So we kept her as Patricia, and then in the movie script, I changed his name to Andrew. Because, of course, you know that it's more likely that a Caucasian person would have a name like Andrew as opposed to Andre. So in the movie script, his name is, I want him to be Caucasian and change his name from Andre to Andrew, put a W on it. You know, now the short film, I had not changed his name yet, so his name is still Andre in the short film, but, you know, that didn't hurt anything because it's very popular. So, but in the movie script, you know, to be more realistic, I changed his name to Andre. So, you know, I think that it adds something to it. You know, it puts a twist on it, a spin on it, and makes it somewhat a little more original than if I would just, you know, have the usual, you know, black man abusing a black woman, which is okay. That's what's to be expected, you know. So now we have something that's unique.
Yes, you do. And the twist to it was that It's a lot of twists, and it's more than one twist in your script, and it's more than one twist in your book. The stunner is that she ended up in prison.
Yeah, well,
That's not the only thing that happens.
Yeah, I don't want to tell a story, but, you know, in the short film, you know, you remember a short film is 5 minutes and 51 seconds, so it's only like a preview of the full movie script. A movie script is, you know, 120 pages, so a minute a page, that's about 2 hours long. So it's just a snapshot. It's not the whole movie. And a lot of people in the comments, because I left my comment section open on YouTube, and I got well over 1,000 comments. And a lot of people are like, well, she didn't do anything. Why is she going to jail and all of this stuff? She was defending herself. That's what I wanted to I wanted that. I wanted people to call and put this spin on the short film that, okay, she went to jail, but of course we know it's not, that's not the whole film, and there's going to be other things that happen. I don't want to tell, because, you know, I want people to, you know, go see the movie. Not the whole film.
So many surprising things that happen, and twists and turns.
Yes, it's very realistic, and it's a lot of twists and turns, and it's somewhat of a roller coaster ride, and it'll keep you, you know, going through different emotions, you know, when you ride the roller coaster with this lady. It's abused, and, you know, it's so realistic, and, you know, and it'll hit home for anybody. A lot of women who've actually been abused, it will hit home for them. And I thought when I did it that a lot of women who actually were abused wouldn't like it, but they are thrilled by it. Women who've actually been abused get a lot out of it, and they are glad that a man has, you know, tackled this subject. You don't hear of a lot of men tackling that subject, domestic violence.
No, you don't.
You know. You don't, and especially in a way that it's real and believable. I mean, you know, Tyler Perry has touched on it, you know, there's been a few other movies that have, you know, just touched on it, but you don't see them going really into depth with it. It's just like, okay, you know, girl meets guy, and the guy just starts beating on her, but they don't go into, you know, what the woman's life is and why she's accepting the abuse or why she's going through the abuse or start the relationship from the very beginning and, you know, and where the signs were and so on and so forth that women sometimes, you know, ignore and stuff like that. And so it's very realistic, and the reason it's so realistic is because, you know, before I did the play version many moons ago, I guess back in 2000 in the Oakland area, before I did the play version, I actually visited some domestic violence homes, and I, you know, actually interviewed, you know, quite a few domestically abused women. They allowed me to come in because, you know, they don't generally allow men to go in those shelters, but they allowed me to go in because they felt, okay, well, he's trying to bring light to it, so we'll let him come on in. So I interviewed quite a few women, and so I did what you would consider investigative writing. You know, if you want something to be very realistic, you have to do investigative writing, just like the people in the news do when they get their stories. They go out and investigate and interview, investigate, and so on and so forth to get the story, you know. So I was able to make the story very, very realistic and believable. A lot of people say, wow, this is fiction. I said, yeah, it's fiction. They feel I have a vivid imagination if it's fiction, but it is fiction. It's very believable and real and raw.
Yes, sir. So you have the book, you have the film version, you have the budget that it costs. So you're getting close. You're getting close.
I'm very close. I'm very close. It's just a matter of even if I was able to get investors, and it doesn't have to be one investor. It could be several investors to bring the total out. You know, so you know that would be, you know, that would be something that would be good. You know, even investors, somebody who's a philanthropist, or I guess there's ways of doing it. It's not always easy trying to get something budgeted, but I won't say it's impossible. You know, all of those movies that are out now had to start from somewhere. You know, and one thing, you know, I really look up to Tyler Perry because for the main and simple reason that he went from literally rags to riches, homeless, living in his car, and now just a few weeks ago they said he's on the Forbes billionaires list. He's a billionaire now. So that I would love to get to that point where, not even if I necessarily to be a billionaire, but I'd like to get to the point where I can have my own studio and make my own movies, just like he's able
yes.
to do. You know,
yes.
He has his own power, his own copyright. You know, you know, and remember, Hollywood rejected him. They told him none of his stuff would work. You know, so. It's one thing I tell you that don't believe it when people tell you that you can't do something. You know, you show them that you can do something and make a liar out of them, because Tyler Perry
yes.
definitely made a liar out of Hollywood. Because Hollywood
yes,
rejected Tyler Perry. Yeah. And I like to look at a lot of stories from other people who are successful, especially, you know, African-Americans in the film world and television and acting and theater and production. And I get a lot of inspiration from them because most of them have real tough stories, you know, coming up the ranks. You know, so I'm no different. You know, I don't expect it to be easy, because anything worth it, a lot of things that are worth it are just not going to be easy. You're going to have to fight for them. You're going to have to keep on believing yourself, and you cannot accept no as an answer. I refuse to accept no as an answer.
Yes, you have to be determined and optimistic, too. You're very talented. I remember our first interview. I interviewed you about the Boston Red Sox child molestation story. Do you remember that?
Yes. Since then, I've written a movie script version of that, too. So I got the book and the movie on that, too. So,
the Boston Red Sox child molestation. So that was touching.
Yeah.
Gut wrenching.
Did you read that book?
Yes.
Did I ever send you that book? I think I sent you that book. Yeah, that's a true story.
Yeah, you did.
That very few people know about. Very
Boston
few people know about
child
that
molestation. Yeah, it was a true
yep.
story. The club.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's
all those little black boys, teenagers.
Yep.
Young men.
It was a white Caucasian manager that worked for them between 1970 and 1990 that would go to the inner city neighborhoods and recruit little black boys to be towel boys, bat boys, and, you know, what they call clubbies. And over that 20-year period, he molested dozens of black boys. And that's a true story. His name was Donald Fitzpatrick. You can Google his name, it'll come up. I met one of the actual victims, you know. Of course, he's grown. He was, I believe, in his 40s or something like that, mid to late 40s or something like that. And he told his story, and I almost couldn't believe it. But I've looked it up and did my investigative writing and found out that it is actually true. It's something that they swept under the rug pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I think you did read that book, and that book is kind of somewhat of a tearjerker to know that this guy got away with it. You know, it was kind of really depressing. And some people might say, well, why do you do these stories that are somewhat depressing? And it's because there's usually lessons to be learned from these stories. You learn from other people's, you know, what other people go through. That's how we learn, you know. Abuse, how else, you know, can we deal with abuse if we can't look at it through the lens of possibly someone who is from the outside looking in and actually viewing it, you know, someone watching it, whether it be on the big screen or on television or even on the stage, you know, you are portraying roles and doing things and showing people things that are happening. And I feel I have a talent to bring, you know, characterization to life.
You have a great talent. Very talented. Extremely talented.
You know, I felt that I had a gift that I should give something back to our communities with, you know. And so that's when I like attacking social issues. All my plays dealt with social issues, teen violence, domestic violence, teen pregnancy. Our streets, our neighborhood dealt with us taking back our streets from the criminal element. You know, I mean, but these are plays that I started doing back in the 90s is when I started writing.
How many plays do you have? Do you know?
I have 4 plays. Justice by Force is gang violence. Our Streets, Our Neighborhoods is about us taking back our streets. Mama, It's My Baby is teenage pregnancy. And actually the play version of Deceptive Vows, which is where it was born. It was called Until Death Do Us Part with the play version. So that was the 4 plays that I did. They were actually on small community theater stages in the Oakland and Berkeley area.
Wow. That is wonderful.
When I started writing. My first play was Justice by Force, and that was like 95. And that was when I discovered my writing talent. It just fell on me out of the sky. I'd never been to school for it. It was a natural gift, God-given gift that I discovered I had. Actually, I was doing some boring security guard job after I got out of the service back in the 90s, and I was bored one night because I had to grave shift 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. One night I had a tablet and I just started writing and making up characters. And by the time 7 a.m. hit, I had my first play, Justice by Force. Ever since then,
wow.
I never looked back. Once I discovered I had the gift, I never looked back. I just kept I wrote 3 other plays and directed and produced them and put them on stage, cast the characters, everything. So,
Atlanta needs to take notice. Atlanta, Georgia needs to take notice. So Georgia needs to take notice of you.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. You know, I mean, I'm going to really be, over the past year, everything is kind of stalled. You know, Atlanta's been a mecca
for coronavirus.
The pandemic, it kind of slowed everything down as far as entertainment and everything. Even they had stopped filming here because of the pandemic over the past year. They're coming back now, But, you know, Atlanta was red hot and was making millions and millions of dollars a year, you know, because they give tax break incentives to anybody who comes here and shoots their movie. So even Hollywood cast and crews were coming over to Atlanta. A lot of the big casting companies, a lot of the big production companies and casting companies, they have, a hub here in Atlanta, and their main production company is in Hollywood, but they fly between the two places. So we've got a lot of big movies shot here, including Panther was shot here. Black Panther, that was shot here. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, that's just one.
We've had a lot of big movies.
We've had a lot of big movies. Huh?
Okay, so Black Lightning too?
I don't know about Black Lightning, but I know that the Black Panther was shot here with
I know back in 2018, Mr. Chadwick Boseman, he's deceased. Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about, Black Panther. Yes, it's a great film.
But that's just one movie that was here. The movie about the movie with the ladies who were the mathematicians that were in the space program years ago.
I know who you're talking about. Targi
yeah.
T. Henson.
Yeah.
And those other ladies.
And all those other ladies. They was the first to help send a rocket to space. And so based on a true story, but I really enjoyed that. That was partially filmed here. That was filmed here in Atlanta too.
Wow, I did not know that.
Atlanta is definitely red hot for entertainment and music too. You know, there's a lot of musical entertainers here too. It's a good place.
Tyler Perry Studios are there also.
Yep.
I know.
Yep,
Tyler
Perry Studios.
Yes. Back in 2018, I was in Greenlee on the OWN Network, Miss Oprah Winfrey's production. I was in about five of those.
Yeah.
And I was in Bobby Brown's film that was on BET. And I was on Kevin Spacey's movie. Back in 2008, I was in Tyler Perry's movie, Madea Goes to Jail. I worked with Florida State University also. I was in a film called Skip Tracer and other films, Disability Factor, and just other films, you know, in theater plays. I was in a couple of theater plays, a Shakespeare play. And I was in T.Y. Martin's theater play, Lord, Why Me? Yeah.
I didn't know you was out there like that.
I was out there. I was acting, but I've don't have a passion for it. I don't have a passion for it like I used to have.
Yeah, you got to have the passion for what you do. If you don't have the passion, you're not going to take it seriously or do well at it.
If I had moved to Atlanta, I would still be doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You would be getting plenty of...
I was mainly extras. I was on divorce court, plaintiff. I was on...
You was a plaintiff in divorce court?
Yeah, but I've never been married. Seems like a friend thing. All the shows are about divorce. And they showed it down here where I live at about 10 times. So I was in that. So I did quite a bit of acting over a 6-year period. But I wrote three books also. Charles and Melinda, Danielle and Faye, Inspirational Celebrity Short Stories. I wrote three. I pulled one, though, Diabetes and Me. I pulled the fourth one. They're short books, so they're not novels like your books. They're like 100 pages, 90 to 100, 120 pages. They're not novels like you write. But I think he's very talented.
Yeah,
and I'm still waiting
for
one of your films to come out.
Yeah, like I said, it takes time. And now that we're coming to the light at the end of the tunnel for these, for the virus, we're starting to come to the light to the end of the tunnel. I think things are going to start popping again, probably as early as this summer. I think things are popping again. So I will be back on the treadmill trying to get something accomplished, start, you know, knocking on doors again. And, you know, it's the short film's award-winning, so getting the short film to film festivals and stuff like that, so that, because you never know who's at those film festivals. And the thing that I didn't know is that the Oscars have a short films category, and I didn't know that till like last year. You know, I know that I just never knew that. I never knew they had it. You know,
I did not know it either. So basically, with the coronavirus, have there been a lot of deaths in Atlanta?
There was a time where it got hairy here. Yeah, you know, and
all over the world, over 20 million people.
And
died.
You know, this is a Republican, was, you know, pretty much a Republican
state. Over 20 million
state.
People were infected. Oh. I'm sorry.
And I think they opened up the state too soon, you know. But right now we're doing pretty good with the hospitalizations and stuff right now in Georgia. I think up in I think it's up in Minnesota someplace where they're getting hit hard right now, north Midwest or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it is. In South Florida, here in Florida where I live, at the governor here, it has been publicized on the news that he's hiding the number of people who have died here in Florida and who've been infected with the coronavirus.
A lot of them have done that. Yeah, a lot of them have done that, you know. They're saying Governor Cuomo did that too in New York. Hid the death from the nursing home. So I mean,
I have to ask you this. I hate to end on a note like this, but how do you feel as a black man, as a black person, about the murders here in America?
Every time I hear of an innocent, well, even if they've committed, most of the time it's 90% of the time it's misdemeanors that these guys are dying from. You know, and, you know, George Floyd died over a phony $20 bill. They escalate when it's somebody black. It seems like to me they escalate and it's like our lives don't matter. You know, they can get away with blowing us away or doing whatever they want to do because our lives don't matter. So,
you know, the police
I think
slaves were, hold on, Mr. Tavares. the police want slave patrols and slavery. You're like, that carries over.
This racial profiling,
they used to call it racial profiling when they go and look for black people, particularly the police. They used to call it hunting black people, hunting them like animals. So this is just ridiculous. Another young man is dead, 20-year-old, 10 miles from Mr. Floyd was murdered.
Yeah, Dante Williams or something like that. Dante something.
Yeah.
I think his name.
20 years old, a father, a young.
And it was a misdemeanor. They could have let him go. They had his tags. They had everything. They could have let him drive away. Why are you going to shoot him? And then, what they don't understand is a lot of us are fighting and running for our lives. People say, well, why are you running from the police? Or why you won't put your hands up? Why won't you do this? Why are you fidgeting? We scared to death when the police pull us over. So what are we supposed to do?
Yes, we're running for our very lives because they're going to kill us regardless. They're going to brutalize our bodies regardless.
Yeah. And it's like, well, you was running or you was fighting or you was – of course, you saw the guy that in Virginia. He's suing. The Army saw a lieutenant. He's serving his country. Had his full camouflage uniform on, and this cop maced him, pulled him over for a minor traffic stop, escalated it to guns drawn, and maced this guy. I don't know if you saw that. Now, he's suing. This happened back in December.
Yeah, he's suing. They said one
this
man
happened back
in
December. This happened back in December.
Yes.
And they just
one
put
man
the tape out and went
in
viral.
Nick, in the car door.
Huh?
I said one man, they slammed his neck and head in a car door.
Then they lied about it and stuff like that. They did fire the officer that did that, the pepper sprayed and stuff like that. But I mean, I think that what's going on is like I told the lady, what I think they need to do, instead of suing the city and stuff like that, it's the police unions that are letting these police officers stay on. The police don't have the authority because they're unionized. So you know, your sergeant can't just say go home, you're arrested, and let you, you know, you almost gotta kill the president to be fired, you know, because the union is protecting them. And they have some sort of arbitration or meeting, and they what I don't understand is they won't allow Chauvin's record because Chauvin has a bad record. They won't allow it in court. Yet they're allowing them to just destroy George Floyd. He's a drug addict. He's this. He's a big man, and we felt threatened. But it's going into his criminal past and all of that stuff. What does that have to do with him dying? You know, so why can't they go into Chauvin's record? If the judge is going to allow them to go to, to George Floyd's criminal record, why can't they say, okay, well, this officer did this on this date. That officer shot somebody before. Chauvin shot somebody before. He's got a record of complaints. You see, like I said, police unions all over the country are letting these police get away with murder. Literally, no pun intended. So my thing is, like I was telling the lady, instead of suing the city, what they should do is sue these police unions. Sue the unions. Once they start suing the police unions and hitting them in the pocket when these cops do things, they're going to start making sure when a cop does something wrong, he's fired.
Sue all of them.
No, nothing else to do with them.
all of them. Sue the police union,
sue
the
police.
City, sue the police department, sue everybody.
Yes, but make sure they include the police union, because the police union, they are getting away with murder. They are keeping these police on the force. They're saying
they're keeping murderers on the force.
You know, yeah, they're keeping these murderous police officers on the force. And then when a lot of these officers, when they get suspended or fired from one police, you know, they still have their POST, their post, which is police something or other, their training certificate to be a police officer. They still have that, so they go to another police jurisdiction.
They do. They also have a bill of rights.
Yeah. They still have the post. The post certification. You know, I don't know what all the letters. I just know that in order to be a police officer, you got to have your POST certification. And so a lot of them, they keep them certification. They should lose their certification so they can't, just like if a lawyer gets disbarred, he can't go to another state and practice law because that's national. And so they should have a national.
It should be
registry.
That way for the police.
Yep, it should be a national registry. So for every police department ought to be able to type in somebody's name and find out if they were fired from another precinct and it'll have a list of everything they did. And it's like, nope, we don't want you here, you know. And a lot of this will stop when there's consequences. There's no consequences. You shoot a black person and you get paid time off. Shoot a black person, you get paid time off. Oh, well, we're just investigating it. But I have a problem I have a problem with when things are on camera, like the George Floyd case. The world watched this guy get murdered on tape. It's undeniable. There's nothing you can say. I don't care if he was on drugs. I don't care what. You cannot say it was justified for that officer to keep his knee on that guy's neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. Yet they're going to have this long trial, and they didn't even arrest this officer right away. So until there was an outrage, until we had to march and get ugly, and then they arrested him. It's like, he didn't do nothing wrong. He killed a guy on TV. And there's guys that are in jail for a lot less. There's guys that are in jail for being accused of something, simply accused of something, and they're doing hard time, even without any evidence. My thing is, why, when there's this much evidence, does there have to be an investigation? When it's a police officer's misconduct, we got to have a thorough investigation. It's going to take about 4 or 5 months. You know, when Ahmaud Arbery got shot here in Georgia by them two guys, they were just hunting him down like a dog and blew him away. We got to do an investigation on that. That's going to take us a few months.
Yes.
Really?
That's what they said.
A few months when we called
him. All right, Mr. Tavares. Mr. Tavares, I got an intro talk with Angela Butler. Thank you for talking about the murders here in America. It's very post-traumatic stress syndrome, traumatizing for everyone, but they do have a Bill of Rights, the police in America do, and it needs to be outlawed nationally. They have their own Bill of Rights. It needs to be outlawed. The police unions, like you said, need to be sued. All right, thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you for having me.
Good night.
Good night.